This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, roll up, roll up. Welcome to Rule the Roost Podcast. I'm your host, T'Trunk, and I'm joined this week by Mr. Sebastian Stafford-Blore. How you doing, Seb?
I'm doing okay, Jack. We're sort of moving between T'Trunk, Jack, Jack Hussey, Jay Huss. Can't really decide on interesting little commentary on the state of your psyche, that, isn't it?
As you see with Pochettino's methods, mate, I adopt a fluid approach to my output. I don't like to be pigeonholed. Don't like to be too clearly defined. You know, we don't live in a binary society anymore, mate. You know,
no. It is your right to identify as you wish.
Gender, sexuality, everything. You know, and in this instance, persona. I guess some people may say it's a work of ego or some sort of underlying mental health issue that I undoubtedly. hold, but it just allows me to sometimes get a bit drunk, say silly things on Twitter, and then just be like, of course I didn't mean that. You know, it's just
alter ego.
Yeah, it's just T'Trunk, you know.
Yeah.
Which is true sometimes, but other times I know I've afforded myself that freedom to be a bit of a knob like that.
It's quite dapper laughs, isn't it?
Oi, now. You watch yourself. It's only a few months ago that you were an owl, mate. All right, so you know, you don't like that.
Why
do you hate it so much, Seb? I'm gonna grill you on air now.
All right, okay. I don't hate it. It was the past. It was a vehicle for kind of. I started out writing like under that guise because I didn't want to be. You know, the double barrel surname guy, and also if it was shit, then as per T'Trunk, I wanted
I don't do shit stuff, mate.
No, sorry. But
I want you laughing at, mate.
Potentially distance myself from it.
Fair enough. That got a bit serious a bit soon, didn't
it? It is also, we're recording a Sunday lunchtime.
But look at it, mate. This is what the gateway, you know. Put an elephant as your Twitter avi, put out some shit, and it's a gateway to proper discussion. Hashtag proper discussion.
Proper discussion, yeah.
That's just what I bring to the mix, I think, mate. No Raj this week. This is mainly my fault because time constraints and such have seen to it that I have to record on a Sunday. And he's we have got our game on Tuesday as well. So I guess it gives us a bit more time to talk about stuff without actually planning properly. But we never plan properally, so that's just bullshit, isn't it?
No. We did plan that one week where I was tasked with coming up with a running order. And then Raj laughed at me for just thieving it mostly from whoscored.com. But, you know, what can you... I don't know. I think it works better. We ad-lib it.
We do. That probably is a nice way of saying talk shite for a bit, isn't it?
Yeah.
So let's talk shite about Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
What are your...
They really were shite as well. They were...
Well, first half they definitely were.
Yeah, yeah.
Possibly one of the worst Premier League performances I've ever seen from a football team. Genuinely. So, honestly, I believe that. Like, anything that stands out for you, first and foremost, mate?
Well, because we're on a Sunday, I've only watched an hour of it. I haven't got any sort of any deeper points to make, but I thought we did okay. I was pleased actually because I saw the first hour. I was pleased. I mean, whenever you see Dembele and Dier missing from our team sheet and Kane, you worry, and you worry especially when we're away from home. But I thought we were pretty good. I mean, we were pretty dominant. We actually at halftime we probably should have been 3 or 4 up rather than just 2. But yeah, always nice to win away. Always nice to win. I suppose actually, you know, given that we're set to go to Russia this week, and I imagine the players will be leaving either later today or early tomorrow, there could have been a little bit of that, you know, Champions League distraction. I mean, you know, Middlesbrough versus the Champions League is you know, it's not pretty easy to get for sort of attention to wander a little bit. So it was professional. We rocked a little bit in the second half, as far as I saw. And yeah, I think we talked a little bit off air about the Pochettino sub issue. And you've got some slightly stronger opinions than I do about that.
I do. I don't know. I think one of the big things that's been made out about Pochettino before we signed him, at least, I think we had Steve on from Southampton, who was particularly scathing of Pochettino's lack of a plan B, which is kind of that phrase that's been bandied about around him. And I don't agree with that. I don't agree with the lack of a plan B thing. Maybe it was true during Southampton, whatever, but you know, he's a manager, he's growing and he's learning. And I think we've seen more often than not that, you know, he has been able to turn a game around, he has been able to manage a performance, so on and so forth. One thing I will say that's fairly consistent with Pochettino, love him as I do, I feel that this perception of having a lack of plan B stems more from the fact he has the utmost determination and conviction behind his plan A. And subsequently, it often means, and this is, I'm not saying this is as a total criticism, but subsequently, he is very slow to react to what's happening on the pitch, I feel, because such is his conviction that his way will work. And it's very easy with hindsight to say, well, this did or didn't work. However, I do think one thing he needs to improve on is the timing of substitutions. I think yesterday, for example, Mr. Sissoko, I think he started the game very well. I like his directness. But toward the end of the game, he was trash. I know that sounds harsh, but I think he was terrible. Toward the tail end, not even the tail end, like I'd probably say from the hour mark, his positioning was off. He seemed to be running all over the place. He was misplacing passes. He didn't really look like he was up to speed with any sort of rhythm with the team.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It was crying out for Lamela to come on. It was crying out for Lamela to come on and just give us a bit more of a foothold, because Borough were in the ascendancy. This is still at the point of it being 2-0, but they were knocking on the door. And I think we just needed someone like Lamela to come in and calm it down a bit. And I know that sounds a bit bizarre to say that of Lamela, who is quite hot-headed and gets stuck in and things, but I think what he brings is that kind of drive and that I think the thing about Lamela is, for all his whatever faults people have, I think one thing you cannot take away from him is that he puts in very focused performances. He always seems to have a clear idea of what he's doing, and I think he is generally always in sync with the team. And I think he's got that through playing with this team for the past 3 years now, 3-4 years. I think it's 3 years, 4 years, whatever. Whereas Sissoko, yeah, he is a new signing and he can't be expected to be on that level. But I just think personally, there's an assured presence now to Lamela. You know, he is an established member of the first team. And I think just his energy alone could have shored us up a bit and seen us keep the ball and stop losing the ball in kind of dodgy positions. And I think Pochettino was slow to react to that. I don't think Lamela should have been coming on to stop Borough from scoring a second goal. I think he should have come on to see us get the third goal and seal the game, you know?
He's actually, you know, I see him as a bit of, he's kind of a pressure valve player in the sense that, like you say, he's not someone you bring on to necessarily just to prevent, you know, a goal from being scored, but his ball retention is actually pretty good. And also, I mean, in terms of what he does at the top of the pitch in terms of pressing and without the ball, he's very good at stopping pressure build against you. So when you get into a situation where, you know, you're clearing your lines and the ball keeps coming back at you, he's actually an ideal player because either he retrieves the ball or he breaks up the play with, you know, some sort of, you know, bastard foul or something. And I think that's kind of that would have had a bit of a value yesterday. I mean, not a big deal because I think we said earlier, actually, I think maybe he's probably going to start in Russia. So maybe the sub was sort of delayed because Pochettino wanted to limit his minutes or whatever. I'm not sure. I'd imagine away from home in Europe, Lamela is an ideal candidate to start. I can't believe he won't. Yeah, we'll see. But I don't know. I'm not. I think we were both kind of slightly disappointed with the Sissoko signing. So maybe we're I don't know. I feel a little bit influenced by what I've seen at Newcastle to date. So I'm not sure whether I don't know.
I think well. Yeah, maybe.
I don't feel good about him. I put it that way. He's got some winning over to do. I mean, he's. You said to me this morning, I kind of prefer him as an impact player.
I kind of
agree with you there. I mean, I like he's a pretty dynamic player, and also I don't really trust him tactically yet, which is not actually a criticism of him. It's just a sort of, well, how can he have possibly learned to have played for Pochettino in 3 weeks? I mean, it's not going to happen. So, but yeah, he makes me a little bit nervous.
I really am trying to, because I agree with you.
It's happened now.
Yeah, exactly.
You accept it. He's one of our players. You get behind him, of course we do. But yeah, still not. I feel a little bit uneasy when I see his name on the team sheet from the beginning.
Yeah, I don't mind seeing him come off the bench, but yeah, I can't really disagree with you there, mate. One of the other talking points from the match. Actually kind of inspired by Ruud Gullit's rant, or well, not so much a rant, but he was quite scathing in his critique of Vincent Janssen's performance, which I feel is pretty unjust. I feel Vincent Janssen was actually brilliant yesterday. But I wanted to kind of look into it a bit further than just a knee-jerk, well, you know, Ruud Gullit's a twat or whatever. Yeah, nice one, mate, you know, for neglecting the fact he assisted a goal and held up play and so on and so forth. But I just wanted to kind of look into this idea that, you know, because I've voiced my frustration before with Kane when I've said that, you know, one of the things I feel that he sometimes doesn't do is be that option, yeah, to be a bit more direct, to be that option in the box when we kind of just need to lump a ball into the box and make sure our centre forward is on the end of it in and around the 6 yard box to just get on the end of something. But then when I look at what Janssen's doing now, it does indicate that this is what Pochettino wants, isn't it? That it is. We've spoken at length before about our fluid attacking band. And how these players are, you know, we need to stop looking at these players as this is a striker, this is a winger, this is a number 10, that this is a unit, that this is an actual block of attacking players who are all signed because they have a particular skill set and a particular ability to operate with one another in a dynamic fashion. You can't expect Ruud Gullit to, you know, research that kind of thing because he's only getting paid to front, you know, the nation's top football program, of course, you know, not front, but at least be a pundit on there. So, you know, you can forgive him for perhaps not being an expert where he's required to be an expert on football. However, if you are to be slightly less harsh, you know, that probably is a slightly nuanced point that you pick up from following Spurs and from watching us every single week, that this is actually how we operate, that it's not Janssen doing something wrong. But I guess my point and then my question to you would be on this one, Seb, is that do you think that maybe, just maybe, that this is something Pochettino maybe should address? Because I would say, as much as I definitely buy into that, and I think it is good, and I think Janssen put in a very good performance yesterday, the word potentially a couple of times yesterday, or maybe towards the end of a game, when sometimes we do just kind of need a head on it. If for want of a, to go a bit accidental, yeah. Harry Redknapp, you know?
No. I take that point. I mean, but I think it's a sort of, I think it's a balance. I think that it's got to be hard if you're kind of, I suppose the temptation for Janssen initially is to focus on being a facilitator. And, you know, because like you say, you know, Kane has become someone that sort of combines those, the goal scoring and the facilitating quite well. But like, you stress that he's become that. He wasn't naturally that, and he's had to learn that. And I think that sort of the tie big. I don't think Chris is really fair. Sorry, I'm yawning.
I know I'm boring, mate. But come on.
No, I haven't had any coffee this morning. I think that sort of his focus yesterday is not would not have been on kind of right, Vincent, can you change the score? It's a right. You're the sort of the for now anyway the temporary piece which has been bought in. Your priority is to ensure that you know the proper function of those players behind you, and given you know given his contribution in that department, I think a really good game. Yes, he does eventually have to become the guy that sort of you know when we're trying to exit, we can't always be playing out from the back. He does have to become you know the focal point and the pivot. But these are things you learn, and you know him just as we've said with Sissoko. I know that Janssen's had a preseason, but you know there's a fitness issue here. I think Raj said this last week. I think in time he'll lose a little bit of weight. He's not overweight, of course. He's quite chunky.
It's getting to there's being fit and then there's Pochettino fit, isn't there?
Two different levels. Yeah, exactly.
That's not a trademark. Trademark expression, but it's a valid point, even if I do say so myself.
No, I completely agree. And so you know,
Christ,
I'm
a twat.
If you're gonna do things like if you're gonna run into the channels and if you're gonna hold the ball up and if you're going to do that, then you know it's difficult to balance it between you know being in the center of the pitch and being. You know the player that bursts onto the penalty spot when the ball is out wide or being worked.
You could see he was knackered after about 65-70 minutes yesterday, Janssen. He was running on fumes, and it's that last section. That's when the Pochettino fitness kicks in. I'm fully going with that expression now. By the way, Pochettino fit. That's when Pochettino fit kicks in.
Okay, I'll go with that expression. I quite like that.
He'll get there because we've seen it. You know. We've seen it with Kane. You know, if you think about the lad that came into the first team, he was obviously, you know, he's a fit footballer, but he was still a bit chubby. You know, he had that kind of youthful glow on his face, kind of rosy cheek, so on and so forth. And I guess part of that is just developing. He's kind of come of age and that kind of thing. But at the same time, you can clearly see in Kane's physique, in his fitness, in everything.
Well, look at the difference between that sort of that slightly round faced guy and you know someone who is you know all still obviously Harry Kane, but you know he a bit more chiseled now around the jawline and he has lost a few pounds. And I think that's kind of you know I think it gets lost the sort of how hard Kane works and how hard the sole Tottenham forward does have to work to kind of straddle those two departments, and he's learned to do it, and Janssen's got to be allowed the same amount of time to do that. But as a sort of, you know, as a first Premier League start, I thought as a first Premier League start as an outright forward without Kane around him, I thought that was a pretty good effort.
I think I know it's very easy to fall into this fanboyism of Kane and stuff because he's our whatever Roy the Rovers, but it is also stuff like this that I look at Vincent Janssen, and he's obviously a very talented player. You know, they might be going through a bit of a tough time at the moment, but you know, he's one of the Netherlands star players. He's absolutely decimated the Eredivisie last year.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at kind of what he was doing, and he was kind of, he was Kane light, for want of a better expression.
Yeah.
And it really makes you appreciate, actually, you know, I know we love him because he's come through the ranks, he scores a lot of goals, but really just to hammer home, Kane is a fucking exceptional talent.
Like, yeah, he's really a special player.
It's not just Spurs fans getting up above and beyond themselves because we want to have a new Ledley King and a new hero. Like, Harry Kane really, 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 if there's any doubt in your mind, like, he really is a special player. You know, he's so talented that he does just what we've been talking about there, and what you've kind of hammered home, Seb, is that he balances all of that. He balances the fitness, the ability to kind of create, to make space for those around him, and also at the same time to score as many fucking goals as he does, you know?
Yeah.
And this is, I just to kind of sidetrack a little bit, but one of the things that I think that does disappoint me that still hangs over Kane. I mean, we heard it at Wembley from the guy moaning behind us.
Oh, fucking hell, that guy.
But, yeah, I mean, but through some certain circles of Spurs fans, I mean, I would say certain circles, the odd knob on Twitter, that's all I'm referencing.
Yeah.
Or the odd knob in the stand. So, you know, you're going to get fucking dullards everywhere that come up with these stupid things just to say something different. But it just still seemed to be this idea, this almost yearning to see it not quite work out for Kane. And I feel that after, like, you know, with the England stuff, I feel that stuff is still there with the press a little bit. I feel there are certain writers that are still waiting for their I told you so moment about Kane, because not a lot of people were convinced about Kane when he first, when he first came into the team, scored that goal at Villa, started scoring a few more goals after that point. People were like, this is great. Great to see a young player doing this.
Nice story.
Yeah, exactly. Nice story. Enjoy these 10 goals and this little run you have, and then we'll see you at Stoke next year or the year after, you know? But because his trajectory has continued upward and upward, it's almost like, you know, there's different levels now whereby, like, people are now like, well, yeah, he might not be a one-season wonder, but is he world class? I don't know. People always want to caveat his success with negativity. And I get that happens to a lot of players at the top level, you know, when they are, you know, it's something we saw with Bale a lot, you know. There's, you know, when
something we're seeing with Paul Pogba actually at Man United.
Yeah, exactly,
which is
that
extraordinary, you know.
Exactly, yeah. That. But I don't know. It just seems to be a bit more mean spirited with Kane. Maybe it's because I'm protective of him, but I don't like it. I didn't like the way he was treated, really, by the press and by England fans at large after the Euros. And you know, whether or not that's getting to Kane, I don't know. But you know, I just wanted to. Basically saying, I love Harry Kane.
I have a theory on this. I think some of this comes from what Kane is stylistically as a player, and that you know, we're old enough to sort of remember. Okay, you know, it's sort of a little bit of a stretch, but it was a slightly different generation of football, and you know, sort of Kane in a way is more of a 90s footballer than a contemporary one, in like in terms of his shape, what in terms of the way he plays the game. Certainly if you compare him to kind of the modern batch of forwards, so you're sort of, obviously, you know, Messi's and Ronaldo's and your Aguero's and players like that, but also to someone like, I don't know, Antoine Griezmann, you know, this is kind of the trend for modern footballers, and Kane is, you know, skillful player though he is a little bit of a battering ram at times for us, and he is powerful and he is physical. I know that he has playmaking abilities and craft as well. I wouldn't deny that. But I think a lot of people, alongside the sort of the natural schadenfreude that exists in the game from some of our fans who want to be proved right about him, and also opposing fans who, just as we do, want to see him fail because he's a Tottenham player. You know, same just as we do with Jack Wilshere or Ozil or whatever.
Both shit.
I, Yeah, frauds. I think there's a little bit of a reluctance to accept that a forward of that shape and size can still thrive. And there's a little bit of a kind of, oh, well, you know, Harry Kane's a bit of an anachronism and eventually, you know, he'll be found out as such. I think the sort of, I think part of that comes from people who, we have the advantage of seeing him all the time and we see some of the nuance in his game. So, you know, he is quite an athletic player and he is quite imaginative. And I think that sort of, you know, there's, I don't think some of that, I think some of that detail escapes other people. And so the temptation is to see him as a lumberer who happens to score goals rather than as an exceptional forward. And I don't know, I think that will change over time. There is a little bit of nastiness at work, but I've always thought that that's in play anyway.
I guess one thing I do find quite interesting about what you've touched on there, though, is like, is this idea that, I'm not saying you're wrong, I'm not questioning, I'm just...
Well, fuck off if you are.
Yeah, just thinking about it. Because I remember... when people would watch, I mean, one of the direct comparisons is always Sheringham, that Kane is kind of like a Sheringham 2.0. And I do agree with that. I think there is a lot of similarities there between their play. But I kind of remember way back when, that Sheringham was often viewed as being a bit of a striker that wasn't so much befitting of his time. I remember a lot of people would say of Sheringham in the 90s, that he's quite a forward thinking, that there's almost like he's got that foundation of being an old school classic English centre forwards with this almost like continental brain. The people would often say things like that of Sheringham because, you know, he wasn't just a striker that would score us a lot of goals. He was a player that would, again, make space for players off the ball. He was very good at linking up the play. You know, Sheringham never had pace ever. But the amount of goals,
slowest forwards I've ever seen, Sheringham.
But the positioning and everything he'd get into, and he's probably a player, I think, in terms of when people talk about the Premier League era, he's a player that's probably hugely underrated. And again, maybe we're biased because we're Spurs fans, but he was a seriously class talent. And I think people got to see that a lot more when he went to United, obviously, because Spurs were shite for the most of the time he was playing with us. But it is interesting, where these kind of players, where it's almost like they're not a throwback or a forward thinking, that they just, there is, because I know what you're saying, there is something about Kane where he just doesn't quite fit in the narrative, in the way football is, but he's quite hard to define. And I think, I don't know, I guess that's just what's so brilliant about him.
Well, I mean, this is, you look at him and, you know, the way he plays and his sort of old fashioned haircut and his funny little face, and then you compare him to, you know, sort of an airbrush guy like an Aguero with his, you know, his just his everything with Aguero, really, because he's a, you know, fantastic player. But there's just something, I suppose clunky about Kane. I mean, if you were being unkind, I mean, when you compare him directly to a lot of those players, he does look a little bit, I don't know, uncouth, I guess.
I'm honestly not going accidental Sam Allardyce here, but I kind of am. Do you think any of that comes from the fact he is an English player? Do you think there is?
Yeah, absolutely. I of course I do. But I think it's terribly unfair, and it's also an example of how perceptions can sometimes deceive. But I think for a lot of people it is the case, and also I think when Harry Kane is when he does have periods when he's off form, and as good as he can be when he isn't, like there are times when his confidence is low, he can have some terrible, terrible moments. And that shouldn't be allowed to shape, you know, the sort of the definition of what he is as a player, but it ultimately does. And so for a lot of people, Harry Kane is not a 30-goal a season forward, even though he is. He's the guy that takes bad corners for England, or he's the guy that, like, okay, against Everton last season, had that clean running on goal and missed hopelessly. And I think that's more about what the modern fan sees and their sort of selective vision of the game, in that they go, oh, well, you know, they clutch at examples of shitness to further an agenda or to prove a point. And I think Kane suffers from that sometimes, unjustly so. I just think sometimes, I think perhaps the way to describe it is that his troughs can be quite deep. Yeah. And so, you know, that's an invitation to his detractors, and it always will be.
What I would say unequivocally about Harry Kane, and I can't speak on behalf of other people, but I'm going to.
Yeah.
I would say a fan, most fans of any other club in Europe would happily have Harry Kane on their books. And I don't think we can say that about. I even include like Barca Real in that. I'm not saying he'd walk into the starting lineup of every single team, but I think there is a place for Harry Kane at any club in Europe. I do. I think there are so few players that offer what he does, and the amount of, basically the return that he has, the drive, the attitude, everything. He's the complete package. And he's one of the best players in Europe. So there you go. Let's talk. Well, we're talking about some of the best clubs in Europe. We're going to be playing one this weekend coming. And we're going to talk now to the Manchester Evening News' Rob Pollard, an old friend of the show, about the Pep Revolution. All right, welcome back to Rule the Roost, Mr. Rob Pollard. Now, the Manchester Evening News' Rob Pollard. How's it going, mate?
Very well, thanks.
Yes, it's been a while, I think. I think we had Mooney on last time. Shout out to Mr. D Mooney, who is running Typical City. That's where we first came into contact with Rob, but I think that's enough of the history lesson for now, isn't it, Rob?
Yeah, I'll probably be a bit of a letdown after Mr. Mooney was on the show, because he's very good, isn't he, David? But yeah. I'll do my best to fill his shoes.
I'm sure you will, mate. I'm sure you will. So let's dive straight in. City, it's a pretty promising start to the season, mate. You're playing some, I would say, delicious football. I like to use these kind of foodie analogies. I would say I think you could describe the way you've started the season as pretty good. What are your kind of initial thoughts? Because I mean, I'm already starting to see a lot of hand them the title now kind of thing. Are you that convinced from the off?
I mean, I think I am, I must say. But obviously, the winning the first five games last season and watching watching them collapse sort of puts a little bit of doubt in your head. But obviously, this time it is completely different in the sense that there's a manager in charge who's kind of, he's got direction and he's got purpose, and he's not a dead man walking as such. I think if you go back to when City lost 4-2 at Old Trafford under Pellegrini, and Van Gaal's United beat them, that was the day really at the back end of Pellegrini's second season when he probably should have gone. So in a strange way, Guardiola coming in kept him in a job for just over a year extra, but he knew he was going, and obviously that became quite clear in the middle of the last season. So really, City had a manager who was just filling a year's space while somebody else came in. So that was never an ideal situation. Whereas this time, City have started well, playing superb football, and obviously now they've got a manager and a coaching team who are here for at least 3 years, and have very much got a vision of where they want to take the team and everything else. So there seems to be a lot more purpose now, and the squad's a bit stronger as well. So I'm more confident this time that they can maintain it. I don't think it's going to be as easy as some people are suggesting. I mean, yesterday's win at Swansea was tinged with a bit of disappointment, because City weren't absolutely, fantastic in the first half. There was a bit of sort of disjointedness, and they were a bit sort of all over the place at the back, which brought back memories of last season. So, you know, City are not the perfect team, but they do look very, very good, and you would have to say strong favourites for the title at this stage.
Would you say, in terms of like the Guardiola effect, that you've actually, I mean, because You touched on it there with Pellegrini. I think it was quite clear to see that, you know, whatever anyone wants to say about how it was handled, you know, he knew he was a dead man walking, as it were. And I can imagine it's very hard for the players to really rally behind a manager that, you know, is obviously, you know, just on borrowed time. And so it was effectively writing a season off, perhaps. I know it could be argued that the players are still professionals and they should want to win, but I guess that's a side point. But in terms of what Guardiola's brought to the team now, do you think it is more a case that, at least at the moment, what you're seeing is top-class players that you still had, you know, I know you've made a lot of, you know, purchases this summer, but still, you still had a top-class squad last year. Do you think it's now a sense that those players, as well as your new additions, are just, you know, relishing this, that it's a new environment, that it's exciting, that there's a bit more kind of hope and direction again? Or would you say that, like, what you're actually seeing now in terms of the way you're playing is actually like the Guardiola fingerprint, as it were? I guess more to the point, do you think he's actually directly changed a lot to bring this about? Or do you think it's more just it's a collective, if you like, a sort of conflation of things?
I think it is a multitude of things, but it all comes down to him. I mean, I think your first point that you made there, that the players have kind of been galvanised by this new environment, these new tactical ideas, this new training methods, match day routine. He's changed a lot of things and they've really responded well to that. I went to Gothenburg the weekend before the season started to watch the City versus Arsenal game, and it was quite a fruitful mix zone afterwards because there wasn't many English media there. So it, you know, you were kind of getting players stopping and having a chat. Spoke to Clichy and Zabaleta, who both just said they'd never worked in an environment as exciting as this. So I think even before the season kicked off, the players were excited. But then, you know, in terms of what he's actually done in terms of the tactics and, you know, the style of football and this encouraging possession and encouraging City to press really, really high and really hard, it's made all the difference. I mean, Guardiola's ideas are actually really simple. You know, people are sort of fooled sometimes because his teams play so well. You think that there's some really sort of, you know, detailed magic going on, when really it's about keeping the ball, you know. And if his argument is, if you've got the ball, the other team can't score for a start, so you're in less danger. And second of all, if you've got the ball, you can hurt them, and you should be. He doesn't like sterile possession, passing the ball from side to side. He likes to get it forward early, you know, playing passes between the lines and trying to get it into the final third and score goals. And that's what City have done. And these very, very simple changes have just, you know, have brought the players on unbelievably. I mean, if you look, every single player in the squad is playing better than they were. So even the likes of Fernandinho and Kevin De Bruyne, who were two of City's best players last season, they've found a new level. Then you've got players who were sort of mediocre last season who found a new level. You've got players who were awful last season who were flying. You know, Alexander Kolarov was, you know, I'm not embarrassed to say I'd sort of written him off in the summer. I didn't think he was worth a place in the side, and I certainly didn't see him as a Guardiola player. And you watch how well he's playing in a new position as well. He's played centre half for much of the season. It's been incredible. So
Sanya's been decent as well, hasn't he?
Sanya's been very good, but Sanya was very consistent last season as well. He's sort of just continued, really. And he's been very good, and he's got a sort of a new role because the fullbacks operate very differently in this team. But just every single player, Otamendi's another one. He was very reckless and rash last season. There was a lot of concern about him. And he's just miles better at the moment. So I think Guardiola has come in, and I don't think he even believes. I mean, he said this the other day in a press conference that he can't quite believe how quickly the improvement has happened. I don't think he expected it either. And 10 wins from 10, 10 straight wins to start, considering how poor City were at the back end of last season. They limped into that fourth spot, really. I mean, it was only because United were in such a mess that City qualified for the Champions League. I think in many other seasons, somebody would have been right on the coattails and probably overtaken them. So when you take that into you know, into context. And he's not signed that many players. A lot of the players City signed this summer are youngsters who are off on loan elsewhere. And he's only just getting the ones who he has brought in for the first team into the side. So really, he's done a lot of this. A lot of this 10-game winning run has been done with Pellegrini's team. And it's remarkable what he's done. And he's, the match day routine, just very quickly, little things he's done there. He scrapped staying in hotels the night before home games, which is something the club have always done. He's never done that at any club. He lets you stay at home with your family and you turn up and have a light training session in the morning. After games, the players aren't allowed to leave in dribs and drabs anymore. They have to have a meal together at the club. And that's about A, team bonding, and B, sort of monitoring the kind of what they're eating, the vitamins and nutrition and everything else. So there's been lots of very big changes and there's been lots of very subtle changes. And altogether, the culture of the club has changed remarkably. And there's clearly a team spirit already that wasn't there before. The players and the staff are all coming over to the away end after games to thank the fans, which never happened before, which sounds like a small thing. But to those lads and women who travel up and down the country, it means everything. And that was something he'd spotted. He'd watched City on video, turned up at the club and said, you know, they're not even going over to the away fans at the end. That's something we've got to change. And he has done. It's been really noticeable. So loads and loads and loads of changes. And the result is just a miles better team.
I think it's something I would say that is echoed with Spurs with Pochettino as well. It's something we've very much seen since he's come in is that culture that you touch on there. How I think before, you know, kind of the tail end of Villas Boas's time and under Sherwood, we had that really disjointed kind of just, I guess, core team that didn't really seem to have any identity or anything. And in the past, what, 2-3 years at least under Pochettino, we've just seen an actual clear kind of ethos and culture develop at Spurs, which is something else that you talk.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Touched on earlier on with Guardiola, I would say I've noticed quite a lot under Poch too, is this idea that people, I think there's this sort of accepted reality, isn't there, that a foreign manager means complicated, that it means clipboards and it means tactics boards and all this kind of stuff, when a lot of the time it is actually just very simple changes that are made. Like you say, it's possession, it's this, it's, you know, and I think sometimes British hubris, maybe, that, you know, if something's new, It means it's bad, and it means it's not. It doesn't have any values. It doesn't represent people, I guess. And I think that's very wrong. And I think that's something that, you know, that you're saying there. How there is that focus on the fans, on the people, on the club as a whole, is not just that 90 minutes. And it's really important. And it's great, isn't it? I guess when you get a manager that can bring that to you, think, because, you know, I think there's a lot of revisionism about someone like Harry Redknapp, for example. I think a lot of Spurs fans, it falls into two camps. You know, you have your staunch old boys that are like Harry, Harry, Harry. And then you have a lot of kind of newer fans that are like, oh, you know, he's a dinosaur, he's this and that. But it was probably somewhere in between. But I think one of the biggest things that I would criticise Redknapp for back then was that he was very self-serving. You know, he was extremely self-serving. And the successes were all about him and the failures were all about the team or the fans. And I would say, like, you know, under Pochettino, that's something that we've noticed. He's always echoing this sentiment that it's about everyone. It's about the collective. And it's great. And I think it's, as much as I take the piss a bit on Twitter, you know, my shtick, I think it is very good to have someone like Guardiola in the Premier League. And it's good to see that kind of developing a squad like City, because you do seem to have those values as well. A lot of the work you do in the community, the women's team, the kind of youth teams, the youth stadium you set up there is incredible. I'm probably going to get in trouble for waxing lyrical about you like that, Rob. So
The setup is. I mean, the off the field, the off the first team stuff has been going well for a couple of years. You know, even last season, the only criticism with the entire club really was the performance of the first team on the pitch. Everything else is really, really well set up and is developing brilliantly. And I mean, there are a lot of sort of new age people involved at City now, and they're not necessarily, you know, your City till I die as who were there during the main road period or whatever. But the general direction of the club is, you know, going in the right direction. And now that the first team is seemingly on the rise as well, then the club is kind of at the position I think they've been wanting to achieve for quite a number of years, really.
Moving on to our game. We sort of got the rub against you last year a bit, which was good. I genuinely thought after we beat you up there, I thought that was it. I thought we were going to go on and win the league at that point. That was kind of the point I said to Seb afterwards. I was like, if we beat City today, we're going to do it, you know. But whatever, rest is history. Leicester held on. But it should be a good game, I think, this one coming up. I think it's possibly more of a test for Spurs at this point than it is for City, I'd say. Although it probably is still a pretty good test for you. How are you feeling ahead of the game?
Well, it's the one that I think everyone's sort of nervous about from a City perspective. I mean, that you're probably aware that the 10 games City have won is a club record for the start of a season. They've never... Seven was the record. Seven straight wins was the best start City had ever managed, and that was back in 1897. So we've already smashed that. You know, Guardiola smashed it. But he's got another record in his sights now, which is most consecutive wins at any stage of a season, which at the minute is 11. So City get a Celtic on Wednesday. Very good opportunity to equal that record, which would mean the Spurs game is the chance for him to break it. But there is a feeling that it might just be a step too far. City can't win every game. You know, no team wins every game. And obviously Spurs have made their best start to a season in a long time. They look absolutely superb in many areas. And I just think it's set up to be a really, really good game, whichever way it goes. You know, there's two proper teams there who are playing well. And I mean, I think obviously City have been to Old Trafford already, which should have been, you know, a really sort of good game, but they just sort of outclassed United, really. United didn't seem to be quite up to the standard that many thought that they would be, whereas I think Spurs are a different proposition. They already look like they've kicked into gear, which I think has come from having, you know, this sort of, this manager who's got a great kind of philosophy about the way he wants to do things and play the game, and he's been there a while now, so he's shaped everything in the way that he wants. He's got rid of players who aren't on board, and you know, he's only got players who are buying into his ideas, which is good to see. So I've got a feeling it could be one of the best games of the season so far.
There's a bit of history as well between the two of them, isn't there? So that should be a nice Sky Sports subplot as well, I think.
Yeah, they'll probably try and make that, you know, more important than the game, but we won't fall for that. You know, we know that the game's more important. I mean, they did it with United and City earlier in the season, that it was all about, you know, they were trying to, basically Sky was saying it was the biggest derby of all time, which of course is nonsense. The two teams have played an FA Cup semi-final at Wembley a few years ago. Then there was pretty much a title showdown decider at the Etihad in 2012, huge games. This was like, you know, the fourth, fifth game of a season. It was not really that important, but they tried to make the managers and the off the field stuff the most important, which of course is what they do. But I'm just much more intrigued by, can City kind of produce their best against a proper team? Because Spurs are the first sort of exceptionally good team, I think, City are going to have played so far this season. So it's the first kind of acid test of just how far Guardiola's brought City on.
It's very nice to hear you describe us in those terms, Rob. It's something Seb and I were talking about last week, actually, before the Champions League game, that it seems to be Spurs fans kind of we're still in this weird kind of territory where we're like, well, we're a good Spurs team, but it seems to be increasingly that a lot of kind of non-Spurs fans are saying now, no, you're actually just a good team now, really.
Yeah, we got a good manager. That's the Ferguson used to say at United, the manager's the most important person at a football club, which of course isn't strictly true. The person ploughing the money in is more important or whatever, but he meant on a kind of day-to-day first team basis, there is no one more important than the manager, and it's so true. And I've seen evidence of that at City this season, and I think you're probably seeing the same thing at Spurs, which is if you get a good manager who knows what he's doing and you know, he's playing in the right way, training, he's preparing his players in the right way, you're going to do miles better. They're so much more important than players. You know, Guardiola is City's best signing of the Mansour era. You know, there's no two ways about it, or could, you know, should prove to be anyway.
Just very quickly to close, mate. It looks as though you're going to be missing Kevin De Bruyne for the game. Just how much of a loss is that for you? Because he's obviously started this season exceptionally. Standout player in the league, quite obviously. I see David Silva is returning. Could he fill that void? Because he's, you know, it's not a bad dilemma to have, is it, if you play David Silva or Kevin De Bruyne? I know they're not exactly the same type of player, but they can kind of occupy that similar role.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There's a lot of options in that area. That's probably City's strongest area, really. So although De Bruyne is a huge loss, and he has been exceptionally good, City do have a lot of options. Gundogan can come in to Silva's 8 role. Silva can go into the number 10 role. And he can play sort of Sterling.
Another great Navas. Start to the season as well. Which
he's been absolutely sensational. He really has. I'm glad I've got the opportunity to mention him, really, Sterling, because obviously he's faced such ridiculous abuse.
Hideous, really, to be honest.
Oh, it's outrageous from fans and the media. I'm not just sort of singling one or the other out. He gets booed, or last season was booed at pretty much every away ground in the country, mercilessly as well. And then obviously he got sort of hammered by the media in the summer after the whole England thing, and he just seems to get such unfair stick. And the way he's answered the critics with his start to this season has just been absolutely, it's been a great story. You know, a really, really great little subtext to City season, I think.
I don't know if you saw it. There was even, just very quickly, there was even like a shade of someone of calling him somehow selfish because he didn't square it for Aguero for the hat-trick yesterday as well.
Yeah.
That seems to be the kind of insidious level of this anti-Sterling agenda, which is, you know, I'm sure we can all speculate as to many reasons why that exists. But, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the one yesterday, yeah, I mean, perhaps, you know, if he'd missed the chance, and then you could probably level that criticism at him. But the fact is, he shimmied past the defender and slotted it home and scored one of the best goals of City's season so far. So it seems slightly ridiculous to me to even criticise him at all. It was a great goal, and he'd ran pretty much the full length of the pitch to get on the end of that. So, you know, he deserved the opportunity to go it alone, in my opinion, and it proved the right decision. So he's just been great, and he's got to be more. They've moved him to the right. I mean, he played on the left for large parts of yesterday, but generally he's been switched to the right-hand side. But I just can't square it off in my head that one little subtle tactical change has made such a big difference. He's got to be a lot more going on. I mean, obviously confidence is a big one. He's got a manager who really has made a thing of saying, you are a really good player and you're going to be a big player for me. And I think that's made a big difference. But there's obviously things going on the training ground as well, because the difference has just been remarkable. I mean, he was a broken young man when at the end of last season. I think he'd played one full 90 minutes in the last 10 weeks of the season. Pellegrini appeared to have kind of given up on him a little bit, probably because he was going himself. And then obviously England in the summer was a low point. And then just to see this lad come back and play like he has done, and it's just been superb, really has. I'm really pleased for him.
It's great to see, isn't it? Right. So just to close it, mate, push you for a score prediction.
I'd probably say a draw, about 2-2 draw I'll go for. But it's so hard to call, I think, because, I mean, as I explain, I just think two of the sort of best teams going at each other early in the season, it can be quite difficult to call. But I just hope it is a good game, because it should be. And yeah, I'll go for 2-2.
Awesome. All right. Thanks very much for your time, Rob, and good luck for the rest of the season, mate.
Nice one. Thanks, mate. Awesome.
Thank you very much, Rob. Yeah, for talking to us about City. I still, you know, if you actually follow me on Twitter, you'll see my actual opinions on Pep, just not when I'm trying to be nice to placate Rob, because he's sort of given up a bit of his time, really, in short. Pep Guardiola is a fraud, and if he was a proper manager, mate, he'd come in and, like Yaya Touré's agent said, you know, it's all well and good to go into a club, spend £200 million and have everyone say you're a great manager, but could he do what Pochettino's done at Tottenham? Well, there we go, mate.
I hate Yaya Touré's agent.
I do hate Yaya's, but you know, maybe it's because it's Poch, but like there's a little bit of me that is like,
I know, but like Selleck says stuff just for the sake of attention. He's awful. He's a cancer. Really
Pep,
is.
Pep, well, say what you really think, sir.
Yeah.
Let's do some listener questions. There was no need for me to say it in that bizarre voice, but there we go. So, like we were saying at the start, identity fluidity. Identity fluidity, mate.
Go with how you feel.
That's it. You know. Mate, if I went with how I feel, I'd be somewhere. You know. non-stop eating what's-its, pizza, booze, the lot.
Yeah.
All of it.
Yeah.
Why is it that the brain makes you this way? Why is it that it tells you that pizza and thickly spread butter and, you know, things like that, alcohol, cigarettes. Why are all these things? Why does it want all those things, and why is it so bad for you? Is it because it's bad for you that you want it, or is it just because they're actually awesome?
I think some of those things are wrapped up in instant gratification. Like, so
but we're not here associate- for long, mate. We're only like, if you think about it, you know, people say that like human beings, if the world's a 24-hour clock, human beings have been here for what, like 2 seconds or something?
So yeah, really, but you know, what I mean, mate, is that if you associate pizza, well, I do, you associate pizza not with, shit, I've got to go to the shop and buy some vegetables, and then I've got to boil the water, and then I've got to maybe make some kind of sauce, and what am I going to make with it? But then you associate pizza with, someone's just going to bring that to me. That'll be nice.
Yeah.
And then but cigarettes, cigarettes really nice is the same way. Thing. It's like, oh, you know, I'm a little bit bored. What should I do? Oh, I know, you know. It's one of those. So instead of like, because I suppose you're the opposite of a cigarette is maybe going for a 5-minute run, and one of those things is vastly more appealing than the other.
Do you know,
in the short term,
one of the most annoying things. Well, my dad said some very annoying things to me over the years, but probably one of the most harrowing things my father's ever said to me. I remember when I was probably about 15, 16 or so, and yeah, they found some cigarettes, and there's that whole "I'm going to get in trouble now" type thing.
Yeah,
and my dad's quite you know, he's foreign, so you know, he's quite an emotional person. Yeah, you know what?
You should fuck off. You know back where you come from, then, John.
Exactly. You know what them foreigners are like. But he's quite emotional. He's quite headstrong, and you know, I thought, this is it. He's gonna kick off about this and blah blah blah. But all he said to me was, yeah, because he was someone that smoked. He used to smoke like 30, 40 a day from when he was a teenager to, you know, when he was in his 30s. And he said, "I'm not going to have a go at you, son. All I'm going to say is, you know, once they've got you hooked, you never lose the itch.
Chill. Yeah. Chilling.
And to this day, it's always stuck with me, and it's true. You know, like I smoked from what, the age of like 18 to like my mid-20s or so. And I'll have one every now and again when I'm drunk, but still, there are times when I'm just there and I'm like, oh.
That'd be nice.
I could kill one. Yeah, now, talking about this now, mate, I could smash, I could
Couple. You know, I probably smoked from 16 to 28. Yeah, 28. And funny, my mum smoked. And I was talking to her about this the other day, that I, until I'd had my first cigarette, like there were always like sort of packets of cigarettes hanging around at home, and you know, she'd have them out and or in a purse. Never stole one, ever. I was never tempted. It's really, really odd, because you think sort of like, because she always thought that sort of she was behind me smoking, but actually it was the complete opposite. It had nothing to do with it. In fact, it put me off it for a really long time.
You're only saying this because she listens, Seb, right? Yeah.
She knows. And but yeah, it was it's a good thing. I mean, no, it's not a good thing. If we've got any sort of younger people listening, no, smoking is bad, but it's also kind of wonderful. So, peer pressure.
Christ.
All the kids do it.
I mean, like,
if you don't go to school, you probably will never have any friends. But so.
Put it this way: if you don't smoke, one day you'll have nothing to talk about on your own podcasts. You know, when you make those when you're older, like us, sat here on a Sunday, cool guys.
Great anecdotes. So you know. Good for careers.
It's great football content, this, mate. Great football content. List of questions. All right. We've had one from at Lev Simon. Simon. Hello, Simon. Which of our youngsters will play the most for us, and who will do the most in the game? Don't know about which game in particular. Maybe he just means
generally.
Okay.
In the game.
We were talking a little about this earlier on, Seb, and so we can try and kind of, you know, recreate as much of the conversation as we can. I don't know about you, but I was quite upset at the start of the season to lose Bentaleb and Mason. However, now, seeing the growing success of Harry Winks and Josh Onoma, I almost feel like we've replaced with better.
I certainly think we've replaced with better characters. Not, but Bentaleb was suspect. I think we see that. And by all accounts, he's taking a bit of flack in Germany at the moment now. I'm really excited about Harry Winks. You're a little bit more excited about Onoma.
No, I like both of them, mate.
In relation to my view on him, I think he's a good player, but a little bit raw, but I really like what I saw from Harry Winks the other night. I thought he was excellent.
I think one of the big things that I don't know how much it's getting talked about, but we've mentioned a few times in conversation, is how last year he was a bit, shall we say, Tom Carroll, and this year he's a bit been on the protein shakes. Like he's tonked out. Man's tonked out, as the kids would say. So. Got you back, Jim Bros. Got you back.
Yeah, he certainly, I don't know whether this is just growing or whether he's actually been on some kind of dedicated program, but he certainly looks bigger physically, broader. And he might have grown a little bit as well. But I always thought that he was sort of destined to be another Tom Carroll, like a sort of a very nice little footballer, but someone that would just be blown over by the wind. But no, he looks like he's Premier League ready. So I think he'll play quite a lot. I think... I'm just interested. I don't know. I'm not really into sort of the predicting youth player thing. I don't know. I enjoy seeing them. I think that's it's just fun to see something different. Not, you know, new signings from outside all the time, but players that we've been aware of for quite a few years who sort of finally make the grade. It's just, it gives you a good feeling as a fan. It makes you feel like your club is healthy.
What I quite like about him, mate, like, and I'll probably be corrected by a Windy or someone like that. Second shout out in as many weeks for Windy. He's just on my mind, Chris. You're on my mind. The thing I quite like about Harry Winks, we talk about Kane potentially being that throwback centre forwards. Does Winks almost fall into that throwback of just being a central midfielder? Because that seems to be that sort of that position that you grew up with in the 90s, that you have, you know, your central midfielders, your wingers, your strikers. And the central midfielder is kind of that guy that just was relied upon to do a bit of everything. And I just from the early indications from what I've seen of Wink so far, he seems to be that. He doesn't seem to be too attacking, too defensive. He just seems to be there to be a bit of a utility man in a way. Decent range of passing, doesn't shy away from a tackle.
You know, I don't know. I'm not sure I've seen enough of him to know yet. I mean, I've got a general a bit of a feel for what he's able to do, but I don't know. I don't think we've sort of until he's given responsibilities in against teams other than Gillingham, respectfully.
Mm.
I don't know, because players. Yeah, I suppose it's just going to depend on how Pochettino chooses to use him in a kind of Premier League environment or a Champions League environment. I don't know. And I don't want to fall into the trap of pigeonholing him, you know.
Fair enough. I think just on Onuma as well, just very quickly, one of the things I feel about Onuma.
You feel?
I feel. Is it just I quite like his rawness, that's the thing. And
it's quite unpredictable.
Yeah,
I quite like that.
What stands out for me is I think I'd liken him a little bit to not too much like stylistically, but just in terms of maybe in attributes, he reminds me a little bit of Oscar in the respect that he's quite good at retaining possession and almost being somewhat defensive is the wrong word, but he's good at getting stuck in the attacking third. And that's something that Oscar's done with great success for Chelsea over the years. You know, and I quite like that. As I said before, baby Dembele, the shades of a baby Dembele about Josh Onuma without being exactly the same type of player as Dembele, though. I don't think he's ever going to be as big or as enforcing as Dembele, but I think he has the potential to be a lot more kind of positive in and around the attacking third than Dembele is. I think he's a good player. In terms of like who's going to go furthest in the game, as what Simon's saying, I mean, if the hype is to be believed, it's Marcus Edwards, right? Yeah, I mean, we can't say that now. We don't know how it's going to turn out, but good God, that run and shot, that was ominous, right? When he came on against Gillingham and you saw that, and it would have been nice to see that go in, obviously. That's kind of the start of the montage in 20 years' time, isn't it? You know, this was his first appearance. And
yeah, with a bit of Coldplay in the background.
You know, for whatever we think about his attitude or whatever stories have happened off the pitch and for whatever hype there is and for so on and so forth, little flashes like that kind of thing. I see more what you've been saying just off of the back of that now that you're like, yeah, there's something there. Like there's a real talent there, but it's, I think what we've got to be careful of is not getting carried away with that, because young players can fall by the wayside. Yeah. Francis Jeffers, I know it sounds silly, but
well, I'd say John Bostock. I remember being at White Hart Lane.
I don't know why I went to Francis Jeffers
Bostock was really interesting, mate. Because Bostock, I remember, I cannot for the life of me remember when, or I think it was just like around 2008, 2009. We played at the Lane against, it was in the Europa League and it was under Redknapp. So, you know, I'm sure it was, you know, he was trying to throw the game by playing young kids. I think Giovanni scored in that game as well. Bostock came on and he looked brilliant. Like, not in the sort of the game dominating way. He wasn't on the pitch for very long, but you saw him with the ball at his feet and you thought, Jesus, he's going to be a player. And so there's a little bit of Edwards in Edwards reminds me a little bit of that, because not in the sense that they're similar, or I don't know anything about Marcus Edwards' personality. I just mean that I want to be cautious, you know, because I thought Bostock would play for England, and based on ultimately fuck all, he didn't. Of course, wherever he's playing now, but he, you know, certainly not playing for England. But talent like that is so precious. And also, I mean, I don't want to overemphasize it, but like some of these little episodes on social media just make me think, really? Like, I mean, I'm a little suspicious of him. Just because this might be confirmation bias. I fully accept that, but you know, our default now is to expect young, talented footballers to be entitled. And so you look for signs of it, and you know, sometimes you mistake sort of just immaturity and, you know, young guys growing up for something more serious and long lasting. But I don't know. I don't know yet. I mean, I think we keep him in the theoretical path for the time being. We'll see.
I'm sure we don't need to shout him out any more than we already do, and everyone knows who he is already. But if any of you are listening aren't aware of Windy, you should give him a follow at Windy Coys, because he talks all about the youth team.
Yeah,
and there's players in depth, and he'll probably give you a better idea than Seba or I will be able to. So
yeah, definitely. I mean, Chris actually. Well, Chris goes to the youth games, and so he a lot of what my perception of Evers is based solely on what he's done for England's age group teams, and that isn't always a very realistic gauge. So someone like Chris, and I think certainly, I don't know if he still does, but at one point he used to bankrupt Spurs, certainly went to youth games too. And so I think they're a pretty, and they're actually in the past, to be fair to those guys, they've been pretty on the money with who they've seen as sort of realistic, viable professionals.
I think I lost all respect for Bankrupt after he was fully on board with Tim Sherwood, mate. You know, he doesn't stop banging that drum. You know, I know, let it go, Bankrupt. He's gone, mate. All right. He's not coming back. Yeah.
Never.
I know he was your hero. Never. All right. But
yeah,
he's a,
you just wait. You see, he just hates Pochettino, doesn't he?
Progressive values, everything.
Whenever there's like a youth player making his debut, you always get that tweet from Bankrupt about how, like, you know, really it should just be a 33-year-old. You know,
mate, he was going on the other day saying, "January, none of this Janssen bollocks. I want Defoe back." You know, he wants Crouch and Defoe back. I heard
Robbie Keane on loan.
Bring David Bentley out of retirement, you know.
Fucking hate David Bentley. Hate him so much.
So yeah, that's at Bankrupt Spurs and at Windy Coys. Give them both a follow. That's Coys for Come On You Spurs. Hey, see what I did there? Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Right, John.
In fact, quite literally, if you just type in Tim Sherwood into Twitter, I'll be very surprised if Bankrupt's account doesn't come up pretty quickly.
Let's have a look here. Right, Boggo at Boggo1 asks us, is Kyle Walker becoming the best right back on the planet? Are any of his previous flaws still present-relevant? I don't know if this is delivered with a sense of irony or not, but at the same time, I don't know. Kyle Walker to me is pretty much a complete package nowadays. It's hard
best
to...
Best English fullback by a mile at the moment.
I mean, him and Klein punching for a while, but he just seems to have stepped up.
I put Walker ahead of Klein now, definitely.
It's phenomenal, though, isn't it? How good Kyle Walker... Because he had that... I remember when we did sign him from United, Sheffield United, when he was a kid, people were saying... Yeah, he was classed in that wonder kid bracket, right? And people were saying, he's going to go far...
But you remember Norton was actually thought of as the bigger talent when that, because they came together.
Yeah.
I think
Norton was a bit
further
ahead, wasn't he? That's what it was.
But he was a little older, I want to say. And I remember we signed them the week of the friendly with Barcelona at Wembley when Jake Livermore scored. And I remember people being really excited about Norton and Walker. Walker had like a first team appearance the following year. The following season against a no mark team, it wasn't a consequential game, but he was lightning. I mean, like you saw the athlete that he was, you know, that he still is, and that, you know, we know and love. But then you thought, actually, you know, he's just like a completely different level of player to Carl Norton. But I don't know. I'm not answering the question. I think that what I'd say is that I wouldn't underestimate, like, yes, he's vastly improved, but there's an interesting pattern in Pochettino's career of the development of fullbacks he's worked with. I mean, because you mentioned Nathaniel Klein, and Nathaniel Klein got a hell of a lot better under Pochettino.
Mm-hmm.
Luke Shaw, I know Luke Shaw was talked about for years before he eventually moved to Manchester United, but he became far more rounded player under Pochettino. Rose's improvement has been I'd say Danny Rose has improved more than Kyle Walker, but he was at a lower level than Walker was previously, and younger, of course. But you know, Pochettino is a kind of the fullback whisperer. I don't know.
He is really, isn't he?
Yeah, he does just amazing things with fullbacks. But I think it's because they have so much responsibility in his system. Because I think one of the things I noticed about Walker this season is that, like, he's always been the guy that will penetrate deep into the opposition half. But I don't know if this is very new, but it's something I've only noticed recently, in that he's now sort of underlapping as well as overlapping, not to go with Brendan Rodgers, but you see him drive through the middle of the pitch a little bit more often. And he's someone that's willing to kind of inject a little bit of temperament into our attacking play. And obviously, like, his defensive positioning is exponentially better. And, you know, it's like night and day watching him defend now, because he used to be such a liability. Especially if you ever see a cross coming from our left-hand side and Walker on the back post, you just thought, oh, bad things happened, basically. There was always, you know, like a drifting opponent, or like something clumsy, or just some terrible clearance. But he's just, that part of his game is, I have no worries about him, which is pretty high compliment.
I think one of the things, again, it's really it's a really basic way to look at it, but apt, again, I feel, is that when you consider, okay, if you don't think Walker's good enough, who do you replace? Like, who do you look at across? Yeah, you know, think of money, prestige, everything as no option. You know, not a problem at all. If you could sign from the riches of any, you know, Barcelona, whoever, you'd still look at it and think, well, who's a massive upgrade on Kyle Walker? If we're talking like, you know, a huge leaps and bounds better player, I don't think there are many. I really don't.
No, I don't think. Well, there are certainly none in our price range. I think he's still a few years away from his prime, but he's a terrific player now.
Oh, he's fantastic.
He really is.
I hope this at Ben Lewis 0795, he actually asked, can we have a Kyle Walker appreciation segment? So I think we've
there you go. There you go, there, man.
That's it. Mm-hmm. He's a great player. Let's just do a couple more questions. Okay, so we've got Nikhil Saglani at Nikhil_Saglani. When everyone is fit, what's our best front four? Good question. Well, Kane, without a doubt, for me, up there.
Are we saying, okay, when everyone's fit, but is this on present form? Or...
When everyone's fit and in their best form, I guess. Let's take it on best. That.
All right, yeah. Okay, let's remove the variables. All right, Kane.
Lamella.
Ali, and... All right, mate, I'm going to get Son. I still have Ericsson there ahead of Son.
Yeah, I would too, mate.
Because, and we're not talking about this in January, but, you know, early days of Son still with this form. Great to see, but you know, Ericsson and Ali have done a lot more for Tottenham, and I'm more convinced of their worth at the moment, and their sort of their ability to sustain their worth. Let's put it that way. So that's the justification there.
So Kane, Lamella, Ali, Ericsson. Yep.
Sissoko gets nowhere near it for me.
No.
Moment, I'm afraid, which is a really sad thing to say about a £30 million player, but. You know, whatever.
£30 million players have become the new £10 million players, I said. So there you go. You know, okay. Maybe look at it that way.
You know what? I still don't feel that much better about it.
No. Ooh, this is a good one.
Give me Yarmolenko for £30 million. I mean, you know, come on. Anyway, let's not rake over old graves.
Simon from online at Spurs fans. Simon asks, if there was one physical thing you could take home after the final game at White Hart Lane, what would you take? It's got to be one of the golden cockerels over the
God, over that'd the be West a great End, momento.
Right? Come on.
I think so, but then I'm terribly afraid of heights. So me getting up there to take it, I don't know. I don't know whether what actually
if,
having
if you could
golden,
fly.
If you, I'd still be really high, and I'd still be afraid of flying. I mean, I'll be high up in the air, and
I think there's a there's a Pixar story in that, mate. Like the bird that was afraid of heights, perhaps. Should pitch
kind of like an offshoot of How to Train Your Dinosaur, isn't it? Yeah, How to Train Your Dragon.
It's good film. Actually, quite fun.
How to Train Your Dinosaur, Christ, Dragon. Sorry, I wouldn't mind a penalty spot. Dig it out. Put it in a glass case.
Did you see? It was quite funny. Burnley, from their official Twitter account on their website, they put out a memo just saying. There's loads of topsoil available free of charge because we've been doing over training grounds and there's a load of topsoil. So anybody wants it, come and have some.
Right. Look, Raj is on the pod, even when he's not.
He's going to critique that accent as well. I don't think it was that bad.
Sounds fucking nothing like it.
Yeah.
Hang on, man.
Well, one physical thing. Okay, so I guess I might not be able to get up to take the golden cockerel and this and that. So I don't know, a seat maybe, a bit of plastic. Don't know. What else can you take?
Goal.
But if he's saying if there was one physical thing, when he says physical thing, is this like what can you actually carry on your person and take? I think you need to be a bit more specific with these questions, Simon. If you're gonna send us one in future, yeah, mate. Just saying.
Quite a good shout. Seat from the dugout.
Seat. They're quite nice.
That could
big
become
and
like your words. Living room. You know.
Oh yeah.
That'd be quite nice.
Good shout. They have some padded, aren't they?
Maybe, you know, depending on how afraid of the security you were, maybe you could make a dash for something in the home dressing room.
I was going to say, if we're talking about like one physical thing you could take home after the final game at White Hart Lane, might even just like, you know, have one of the players' Bentleys or something. Do you know what I mean?
Just grab one of the players, just like over the shoulder. Right. Someone small, like I reckon you could just grab like Tom Carroll, put him over your shoulder and make your way back down. The high road.
What would you do with him though, mate?
I don't know. But, you know, it would be at least be a sort of a talking point if you wanted to have a dinner party or, you know, house party. You know, can you go and get me my...
After the prison sentence is finished.
But even then, if you were doing time for that, that little anecdote would probably amuse your fellow inmates. What were you in for? Tax fraud? You... I murdered someone. I stole Tom Carroll from White Hart Lane.
Yeah. I stole a 14-year-old boy-looking grown man.
Special wing for people like you, but...
that's my territory you've gone into there, except the problematic.
That's your USP. Sorry, mate, yeah.
Criminal element. No. Anyway, let's kill it there.
Yeah,
if you do want to listen to any of the previous episodes of Rule the Roost podcast, you can do so on Acast or on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at @RTR_pod and also go to the website rtrpod.com where if you don't want to listen on Acast or iTunes, there's an embedded web player there. Come on, you Spurs.
Bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.